universe than in the last case. Mr. Domina.
Thank you, Your Honor. This is indeed a much smaller case. It was not disposed of on summary judgment. It was tried in 2.5 days. I represent Midwest Health Partners and Midwest OBGYN. They employed Sherry Sharif, who is the plaintiff who prevailed before the jury on a claim that she was caused to work in a hostile work environment. Originally, Ms. Sharif filed 3 claims. She also sued, alleging that she was the victim of gender discrimination. A directed verdict was granted by the magistrate judge on that count. She claimed also that she had been victimized by other behaviors that were characterized by the plaintiffs, and they were disposed of by the jury in a verdict for the defense. We're here only on the hostile work environment claim. These are the facts. Before September of 2003, Midwest Health Partners Medical Practice was a 100% women-oriented OBGYN practice. In September of 2003, Midwest Health Partners, in a satellite location in a town of 21,000 people, added medical services for their community. Those added services were chiropractic care and physical therapy. Ms. Sharif was hired as a physical therapist to work in that satellite location. She worked there without complaint and satisfactorily until St. Patrick's Day of 2005. On that day, she took coffee to her colleagues at the office. One of the chiropractic physicians, after enjoying the coffee in a group setting, walked across the room in the presence of other persons, kissed her on the temple, thanked her for the coffee, left the room, said nothing sexual. Ms. Sharif was troubled by that episode. She contacted her employer about it, who offered support.
Well, wasn't there testimony that he pulled her towards his body also?
That happened. That happened later, but not with the kiss, Your Honor. The kiss is a distinct episode.
All right, that's the St. Patrick's kiss.
Right, and what's important about is that the kiss really is that Ms. Sharif wrote her own letter, making that election herself, to the offender, told the offender never again, met with him alone, then told her employer, "I consider this resolved, please do nothing with it." After that time, in March of 2005, until September of 2005, there were no more complaints. On September 14 of 2005, a complaint was received describing what you referred to, Judge Murphy, and that is a complaint that on that day, in a hallway at the clinic, walking down that hallway, the chiropractic physician reached around the waist of the complaining plaintiff and pulled her into his body 3 times as they walked down the hallway. She reported it immediately. The employer did 2 things in response to that. First, it allowed word of the complaint to leak out. Second, it contacted its lawyers. But it did not confront the offender for 6 weeks until November 4 of 2005. And on that occasion, when it did confront the offender, the president and chief physician in the organization cautioned never again and said, "You're going to counseling, not so much because of a recurrent series of complaints, but because the man's attitude wasn't very good, frankly." And he did go through a series of complaints.
Well, he didn't improve his attitude much by doing a 5-day training program in one afternoon or some such thing as that.
Your Honor, the counseling was rotten. It was awful. It was scheduled for 5 days. It was done in 1. That wasn't a good idea. We concur that the president of our Midwest shouldn't have allowed that. But what is important is that there was never a recurrence of the events. This chiropractor never touched, never pulled on, never otherwise gestured toward Ms. Sharif, except...
What about this passing her in the...
Yeah. Except when passing in the hallway from time to time, he put his hands back and stood like this if there were others present, obviously making it clear, look, you've accused me of doing something, and I'm not doing anything here. That bothered her. But that wasn't gender-based.
Do you think that was the message he was attempting to impart?
I don't know. I know that that's the evidence. And the evidence may be susceptible to 2 different interpretations, one of which is, I don't like you for complaining about me. And the second is, I want to make it clear I'm not doing what you accused me of doing, and I didn't then.
Well, her testimony was she felt he was mocking her, wasn't it?
She did say that, but when she was asked, what do you mean by mocking, it was only the plaintiff who described the gestures. And the gestures were not, when described physically, did not suggest mocking. They suggested either of the two interpretations that I think I've just discussed.
Counsel,
with
what do you
Judge
think
Dean.
The worst inference the jury could have take that could have taken from that for your position? I think that's what we have to assume here.
I think the worst inference would be, and we recognize how evil that is from our point of view as appellants here, the standard of review is for us. I think the worst inference the jury could draw from that is that the chiropractic physician was trying to make things uncomfortable for her for making a complaint to the employer. I think that's a fair inference. I do not think that rises to the level of a Title VII case.
He's not responsible for the retaliation issue of discrimination, is that the point?
Well, there's no gender basis in any of that activity. There's precious little evidence that there was a gender basis in the beginning.
Is the issue gender or not an objective test that we review de novo, or is that factual?
Well, I think here, because we're here on a trial court's ruling on issues that were presented as a matter of law, should judgment NOV be granted or not, this is an issue you have to decide anew. So it's a de novo review. And here, Your Honors, on that de novo review, our view is that if we view that evidence of those mocking activities and of the pulling of this woman into the chiropractic physician's side in the light most favorable to her, as we must, then what we have is an isolated incident involving one actor and one victim without recurrence, followed by mocking gestures that suggest, you didn't get it before, I wasn't interested in you sexually, but I misbehaved, I'm over it,
well,
now why don't you get over it too?
Wasn't her testimony that she wasn't just pulled in, but that he pulled her in a way that her breasts brushed against him?
That is very interesting. On the morning of the second day of trial, on redirect examination, after this case had been developing for over a year and had been discovered and been tried for a day, after direct examination and cross, and knowing there was no redirect examination that could occur, for the first time she said, my breast was touched. That's the first time in the case the word breast came up.
The jury heard it.
The jury heard it. It did. And now the question is, would a reasonable jury believe it in that context? And that's for you to decide. If you decide, well, it might, we lose. It's as simple as that.
Counsel, I know you stressed the Duncan case, but what about the Hathaway case? You know the magic words from the Hathaway case. There's no bright line between sexual harassment and merely unpleasant conduct, so a jury's verdict must generally stand unless there's trial error.
Yes, I'm aware of that holding. I'm aware of that standard. I think the jury deserves an enormous amount of respect, and your precedent gives the jury that respect. I am hesitant to say that I think that any verdict of any jury should be disregarded. I think it happens too often, frankly. But in this case, the question is, was there real evidence of anything more than that this employee, who we didn't know was on anxiety medication when we hired her, we weren't entitled to know it, who continued on that medication before this episode, who continued on it after this episode until she became pregnant and it wasn't good for her to use it, was simply anxious, or was there a problem? What we do know is that there was no pervasive environment at the workplace that suggested gender-based hostility, sexuality, ridicule, intimidation. We have isolated occurrences, but Title VII is not a civility code. We disciplined this person for not being civil. He went through inadequate counseling, but he stopped. He was put on probation, and he continued in his stopped status. After she left, he left.
Was there some testimony about how she was aware that he hadn't gone through the whole counseling program?
I think there was testimony that she knew he had at least truncated it. I'm not sure about whether it was all of it or just too fast. But, Your Honor, I don't want to defend the counseling program's quality. I do defend the fact that we required it, but we shouldn't have allowed him to do five sessions in one day. There's no question about that, and that would be impardonable if there had been a subsequent occurrence. There was not. That's what's important here.
Counsel, did the jury hear about the second Midwest employee who complained on April 24 about the incident on April 18?
Yes.
They heard that too, didn't they?
Yes, and over objection, because, of course, that's 6 months after the fact. And that's after this plaintiff had left and as the perpetrator was leaving employment there. So is that evidence that should have reached the jury? And is it evidence upon which a reasonable jury would rely in deciding whether this employee was subjected to a hostile work environment? I think the answer is no. And for those reasons, we ask that you reverse and remand this case, which is admittedly smaller than the first you heard.
I have one additional question. How is it that 42 U.S. Code 1981A3A got lost in the shuffle?
I don't think it did get lost in the shuffle, but I only think that it's persuasive and not controlling here. That's why I don't think it's legitimate to say that we dropped it.
So you think the $100,000 is okay, but you'd prefer the $50,000 cap? Or
well, no. We only cite the cap for its persuasive value, suggesting, Your Honor, that here's a number that appears in a statute that we don't claim applies here. That's all I'm saying, and that's why I don't think it's accurate.
It doesn't really apply here.
I don't think so. That's why I don't think it's fair to say we dropped it.
Okay.
Counsel, is it true that there's no evidence in the records how many employees Midwest has?
I don't believe there is evidence of the number.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. White.
Thank you, and good morning, Your Honors. Here we stand on the 27th floor in Missouri overlooking the Mississippi River, and we're trying to determine what happened far away in Norfolk, Nebraska a number of years ago. As it's been said, we can only see but through the glass darkly at this point in time. On the other hand, the defendants characterized this behavior at the time themselves, and these were in evidence and presented to the jury. The defendants' characterization of what occurred were acts of sexual impropriety and familiarity. That's what they described and advised Ms. Sheriff had occurred to her. And I'd like to point out, Ms. Sheriff does take anti-anxiety medication. Many Americans do, and they're productive workers. Ms. Sheriff did not behave in an irresponsible manner. If you look at the record, the first time Dr. Meyer invaded her space and acted inappropriately kissing her, which demeans her as a professional in front of many other professionals, she talked to management responsibly, said she wanted to go forward, have a productive working place, wrote a letter, said, please never touch me again. Dr. Meyer said he would not, and she moved forward. That is a distinguishing characterization from many of the cases cited by the defendant. Ms. Sheriff promptly reports, shows a cooperative attitude, wants the workplace to work, and tries to move forward. Then Dr. Meyer escalates the behavior subsequently, and the description is interesting that this first appears. It did appear on redirect, but if Mr. Domino, the defendants, doubted the veracity of Ms. Sheriff, they had deposed her, they had deposed other witnesses, they had their whole rebuttal case to rebut the fact that this is what occurred in that hallway. Dr. Meyer reaches forward, grabs the side of her breasts on one side, and pulls her forcibly to him, pushing the other breast into his chest. Not once, not twice, but three times. Now, if that was or was not...
Three times in that...
In that one course of the hallway.
Same episode.
Yes, sir. She'd pull away, he'd walk down after her, pull her in again, she'd push away, he'd do it again.
How many episodes were there in the term of her employment?
There were the two, the kissing, Your Honor, and then this instance.
So two.
Right, and three times she was grabbed in that manner.
So three plus one or two, whichever.
How on 2 days.
And this was over how long a period of time?
Your Honor, I don't know exactly, but there was a period of time of substantial time between the initial problem and then this event.
Well,
I cannot cite the record. I'm sorry, Your
Honor. Counsel, one was on St. Patrick's Day. And I'm sorry, my notes aren't clear in the other one. It was reported on September 14th.
Right, which is the same day. So it was about 6 months, Your Honor.
At the outside.
Yes.
In fairness. Yes.
Two and 6 months.
Yes, sir.
You know,
but escalating in nature, Your Honor, from a kiss on the forehead in front of others and then to three physical grabbings. And I think what I'd say to this court is, this is at most a mixed question of law and fact. At most. I would say it's truly a question of fact, and the defendants characterized it for us, and that was in front of the jury.
Well, wouldn't you have to concede, Mr. White, that this circuit isn't the epitome of consistency in these kinds of cases? Looks to me like LeGrand and Duncan and Sutherland may cut against you, and Hathaway and Runyon, and what's the other one, go the other way, Ike, however you pronounce it. So what do we do with the...
I think, Your Honor, we accept the defendant's description of what occurred. These were acts of sexual impropriety and familiarity, and then when they were reported, the defendant went to their attorney, and their attorney said, you need to act aggressively. This is inappropriate. You need to act aggressively.
But these cases, Mr. White, deal, more importantly, it seems, with the number and the kinds of contact. And here we have either four or two over 6 months.
I don't think this court has ever stood for the proposition that
it's a factor that the decisions take into account, and substantial factor, it seems to me.
I think they have, Your Honor. I don't think this court should ever stand for the proposition that people get free grabs. I mean, I don't think that's the law, Your Honor, that somehow we can tolerate. You must tolerate so much physical inappropriate touching,
well,
and it doesn't rise to a level of hostility.
The law says severe or persistent, and so one grab is enough if it's severe enough.
Let me talk about that for a moment, if I may, Your Honor.
I think
Ms. Sheriff asked for an investigation, and over again, and was promised it, and over again asked them to do an investigation, which they didn't do, Your Honor, until in despair she quits. And then they do an investigation, and this is in front of the jury as well. What does that investigation reveal? That investigation was done at the advice of counsel saying, you have to get ahead of this. So what did they find, which they could have found at any time when she was asking this? They found that there was a consistent pattern of inappropriate behavior by Dr. Meyer. A consistent pattern. And they also knew, Your Honor, and this was told to Ms. Sheriff when she went to the owner of the clinic, that Dr. Meyer had had previous complaints in his former practice that they'd purchased. And the employer knew going in. First of all, they had received reports he'd had other complaints in his first practice. There's the incident of the kissing. Then there's the incident of the three separate grabbings. And they are told to investigate it, so we don't know what the real characterization of the situation would be if they had investigated it, except that when Ms. Sheriff quits, the defendants again characterize the conduct of Dr. Meyer as a consistent pattern of inappropriate behavior. The defendants themselves give this court the characterization necessary from their own studies of what the environment Ms. Myers was faced in. So I would say to you, Your Honor, look at what the defendants characterized it and accept it at face value, that it is what they said it was. And then we find, after Ms. Sheriff quits, another female employee quits in despair because Dr. Meyer's been sexually harassing her as well. So there is a plethora of evidence here, Your Honor, that a jury could fairly conclude we had a hostile environment, not just the instances to Ms. Sheriff. That is not a requirement that it only be to my client. In addition to that pattern, which is well in evidence, we have a pattern of absolute indifference. When you come to an employer and say, I'm being sexually harassed, this is inappropriate, and the employer says, you're right, it's terrible, we're going to stop it. And then they do nothing, and you call them and they do nothing. And meantime, they finally, 2 months later, tell the doctor that's supposed to be disciplined, And he tells him, I'm not going to any counseling. Forget it. And then when you walk by him in the hallway, he goes, to mock you, which is the only evidence in the record of that interpretation. That's not only...
So that's at least three episodes instead of just two.
That, and also the harassment of the woman, who was a contemporaneous employee with Ms. Sheriff, and also the knowledge that this man had harassed before, and the refusal to investigate to find out. One of the problems we face here in terms of evidence, Your Honor, is this employer didn't do an investigation in a timely manner at all. There's still no evidence that they talked to other female employees except the ones that quit.
Counsel, you know this case much better than me, but I thought there were instances in July and August she testified to. Of course, she doesn't report them to September 14th.
Right. And I don't think that they were not. She reports that she couldn't do it because there were patients there, Your Honor. You're right. But she doesn't report them.
What does she say happened in July and August?
My recollection is that the doctor was inappropriately touching her while she was near patients, and she didn't want to make a scene in front of the patients.
Okay, and one happened in July and one happened in August.
Yes, sir.
And that was before the jury.
Yes.
But she doesn't talk about those till September 14th or
something. Right.
She complains about the real three times in the hall.
Again, this is a woman who wanted to make the workplace work. This was her career. She was a professional. She was a physical therapist. She was head of the physical therapy clinic. She desperately wanted to make it work for the company to be successful and for her to be respected as a highly trained professional, which she was. And you have an employer who acknowledges the treatment was completely inappropriate, says he'll do something, does nothing. And that is hostile, Your Honor. If you go to the police officer and say, I've been abused, and then says, yeah, we'll get to you. And then you call them again, and they don't come, and they don't come, and they don't come. That builds a tension in the workplace because you've been told you've been wronged, we will give you a remedy, and then we don't. That, in many ways, is worse than if they had just said, hey, things happen. Boys will be boys. Then at least you know where you stand and you can resolve it. But to be told you've been badly treated, it's completely inappropriate. This man has a history before he got here doing these kind of things, and we're going to stop it. And then to be mocked.
How do we ignore 1981A?
I would tell you, Your Honor, 1981A is an affirmative defense that the defendants were required to allege and then to prove. Had they done that and not just raised it after the trial, we certainly could have combated it with the fact that they had more than 20 employees. But since that issue was never presented to the trial court, evidence wasn't put on it, we can have no evidence that it's there one way or another. We're not required, as I understand it, Your Honor, to disprove all matters. The defendant must put the court fairly on notice of what issues must be tried if they feel they have a defense.
And, counsel, you agree there's nothing in the record about how many employees the employer has?
Absolutely, Your Honor. There is nothing.
Thank you.
With that, Your Honor, I appreciate your courtesy of the argument, and thank you.
How much time does Mr. Domino have?
3 minutes, Your Honor.
May it please the court, when the adjectives are stripped out of that argument and out of this record, one thing I'm sure about, there is no plethora of evidence in this case to sustain the verdict. There is no characterization by the defense in this case that the conduct was sexual impropriety and inappropriate familiarity. What happened here is that there was an attempt to teach this chiropractic physician that it's not 1950 anymore and that he needed to behave himself in a way differently than he was behaving. Whether he had a sexual animus was never proven. Whether there was any gender basis for his conduct was never established. There is evidence in the record to the contrary. But he needed to learn it isn't a time when you grab people, when you touch people, or even when you kiss them in a gesture that might have seemed innocent enough if this were a 3-year-old child, and it certainly was not. It was a professional person who deserved to be treated like a professional, and he needed to learn it. This is about him learning, one person, how to conduct himself. It's not about a hostile work environment. This is a business operated for women, largely by women, to treat the most intimate conditions of women with an adjunct facility, and when there was a complaint, it was addressed, and it did not happen again after September.
Well, what about, from your point of view, I would think this one piece of evidence is pretty bad, that in the company's letter, they refer to it as acts of sexual impropriety and...
Is that Exhibit 17, Your Honor, that you're referring to?
I believe
so. That's the exhibit that Mr. White referred to, and that's the one I suggest was in the context of counseling this person so he would come to understand that another would perceive or could reasonably perceive that what he was doing was different from what he intended, so he needed to shape up. That's a part of the remediation. It's not an admission. So we request for these reasons that you reverse and dismiss.
May I ask another question?
Of course.
Counsel, you properly mentioned the July and August instances in your brief.
Yes, Your Honor.
But it looks like the testimony is awfully brief on them.
It is brief.
What does it say? I haven't looked at it.
As I recall it, one of those two instances is another hallway grab. The other is either standing too close or touching hip to hip while at the side of a patient.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. May I be excused?
You may. Thank you, counsel.